My homeland, I am exhausted of tyranny. I am tired of oppression. My homeland, you are voiceless. You're full of pain and sorrow. There is no even cure for your pain. My homeland, who betrayed you? Who broke your heart?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Dissidents and Dictators, the flagship podcast from the Human Rights Foundation. My name is Casey Michelle, and alongside my boisterous co-host, Alicia Maldonado. Say hi, Alicia.
Hiya.
We are honored to be joined today by a woman who, frankly, needs no introduction, but we're going to try one anyway. Masih Alinejad is an Iranian journalist and activist and all-around troublemaker, perhaps best known for highlighting all of the ongoing crimes of the regime still in power in Iran. You may know Masih from the recent abduction and assassination attempts against her right here in the United States of America, with the Iranian regime going to unprecedented lengths to try to silence her voice and stop her efforts. Again, it is an absolute honor to have Masih here today with us in studio. We've got a great conversation in store, so stick around.
Let's go.
Masih, thank you so much for joining us. Such a pleasure to have you in our office.
Indeed, it's a pleasure for me as well.
We have so much to talk about. You're so prominent in addressing these issues. I'd like to go off the top with you discussing this corruption on earth charge that is quite contagious in Iran these days. Can you talk about it and some of the cases, Mahmoud Mahabi and...
And why is it...
Mahmoud Salehi. I mean, hey, yeah. Is it in 21st century, can you believe that there is a charge called spreading corruption on the earth?
As opposed to the moon, as opposed to Mars, I mean, where's...
To dictators, that's all.
What is...
And they think that they are the representative of the earth, the moon, the stars, everything. And in their eyes, you both, and me, and you, Amar, as well, we are the master criminals. Mm-hmm. Why? Because by speaking up, we're spreading corruption on the earth. Yeah, so Tumaj Salehi was a rapper. His crime was just singing during Woman Life Freedom Uprising. We are all shocked that now he has been sentenced to death.
It's
shocking. And Mehrabi as well. Mahmoud,
yes.
He's very, very talented, innocent for the crime of using social media. So you see, it doesn't matter whether you use social media or you use your own voice or you show your hair. You show your hair, of course you are a master criminal.
Of course.
You cannot walk unveiled in the streets and then you get lashes, you go to prison, you face torture, you face rape, or you get killed like Mahsa Jina Amini, whose brutal murder actually sparked a revolution in Iran.
And Dina, too, recently. You were talking about her on a young journalist who was arrested. Can you talk about her case a little bit?
Exactly, and thank you so much for mentioning, because Dina is a journalist. Her job is to give voice to voiceless people. But this time, she herself got arrested for not covering her hair. What she did, she came out from the morality police room, and then she exposed the sexual assault. You know, Nikasha Karami was only 16-year-old. She was abducted, raped, and then got killed. So Dina exposed her own story. You know, I still get goosebumps.
I have goosebumps now, actually.
That
you
in 21st century.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, we're all human. You have to react this way to these horrific crimes against these people who are speaking. They are, in Tumaj's case, rapping. They are artists. They are posting online. They're making personal decisions about their hair. How can you not have goosebumps?
Yeah. And cannot... Look, sometimes I lose words to explain that. Women in Iran get lashes for the crime of just hashtag walking unveiled. Lashes. When they send their pictures. When actually they talk about it. This is another crime, and they go back to jail.
As in Dina's case, too. They sent her back to prison as well.
In 21st century, being a woman is a crime in my beautiful country, Iran. But what actually gave me power that the civil disobedience, the resistance, mm-hmm. you know. Women who lost their eyes, they were shot in their eyes during Woman Life Freedom Revolution. So I remembered that when I became Woman of the Year for Time magazine, I just wore a T-shirt full of their photos with one eye. Now I have them all. They're going to come to Oslo Freedom Forum.
Fantastic.
Wonderful.
And listen from them.
I love that.
They have only one eye. Like, you know, the novel, I hope you read that, called The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood, which is a series as well. So you see that bunch of white women being blinded, receiving lashes, being forced to marry, being forced to bring children. This is the situation in Iran and Afghanistan. So clearly...
In 2024, a lot of
folks in the broader democratic world, those of us that live and work in democracies, they look at something like Handmaid's Tale and say, this is some dystopian future. God knows this could probably, hopefully, never happen here. And yet here we are in 2024, and this is exactly what is happening for these women and these girls still in Iran. Again, just trying to... They're not committing any corruption. Mm-hmm. They're not stealing money. They're not criminals as traditionally understood. They are walking around unveiled. They are posting. They are speaking their minds.
They're going to stadium.
And they're
what
losing eyes. They're being jailed, sexual assault, rape. You mentioned it.
Let me tell you about those women who lost their eyes. Most of them are young and just, you know, ordinary women taking to the street to protest the brutal murder of Mahsa Amini. So think about it. One woman got killed. The other woman took to the street protesting against the unjust killing of their fellow citizen. And now they're all blinded. Mm-hmm. And what I talk to them and what I hear from them, it just gives me power, that how they learn from their pain to be powerful and strong and you know, like unbelievably fearless. They say that the government could manage to take our eyes away from us, but not hope. Even with one eye, we will see an Iran without Islamic Republic. That kind of civil disobedience is called true feminism in Iran.
We talk about this a lot, too. You know, the more these authoritarian regimes try to, you know, do what they're doing in Iran, they're creating the very thing that they don't want, which is people who actually have the guts and the strength and the fortitude to stand up against them, to rise up against them.
Exactly.
So then they have to go overdrive and work even harder to, you know, put the people down.
Yeah, like what happened to Tumaj? What happened? From prison, Tumaj Salehi, who received death sentence, sent an audio message to outside the world saying that, don't cry for me. Just be as brave as me and protest against this regime. And he even said that, I don't want my, you know, followers, especially the youth, mourning for me or crying for me. I am very happy to sacrifice my life to, because they know, they all know that freedom is not free.
Right.
Men get executed for the crime of supporting their sisters.
Right.
And, you know, I wanna say that the Islamic Republic, the mullahs, for years and years, they managed to put the fear inside us, but now they are scared of their own people. They say death to America, death to Israel, but the biggest enemy for Islamic Republic, for these backward mullahs, are us.
Absolutely.
Women, the people of Iran.
Masih, you have been speaking up. You have been writing, investigating, highlighting, communicating to others, again, in the broader democratic world, the crimes of this regime, the crimes of these mullahs. We've been talking about some of the recent cases, Tumaj, these corruption on earth cases. Are you surprised by how, again, very much an outsider's perspective on my end, it seems like things are spiraling right now in Tehran with these mullahs, with these decisions. Are you surprised by some of the decisions the regime has taken in some of these crimes? Are you shocked by it? Or is this simply an extension of what we have seen in the years and decades previous?
I am going to be very honest with you. I am not surprised by the regime at all. What makes me surprised and angry is the reaction from the democracies, free country, that those female politicians, high representative of the EU, cutting their hair in solidarity with the women of Iran, but never dare to cut their ties with the killers of those women. That makes me surprised. When I see that the same politicians who say, we stand with the people of Iran, and they do nothing. We don't want you to stand with the people of Iran. Please sit down.
Don't want a performance. We don't need a performance.
Yeah. Sit down with your own allies and make decision to isolate the Islamic Republic. That makes me surprised. What makes me surprised and shocked, the way that Putin, Maduro, Khamenei, dictators from China, some other countries in Latin America, Eastern Europe, Asia, all over the world, dictators are backing each other, supporting each other, voting for each other at the United Nations, which became a place to unite dictators.
Right.
But democratic countries, they're not supporting each other. They're not good as dictators to be united. That breaks my heart.
What do you think that is?
I believe that they think that if they give something that dictators want, they can get away from that.
Uh-huh.
They can negotiate with dictators.
Right.
This is wrong. Dictators understand only one language, language of pressure. So, for instance, in my meeting with President Macron, I actually asked the same question, that why you keep negotiating with the Islamic Republic instead of right now recognizing one of the most progressive revolution being led by women in Iran. And he said that, Massey, we have hostages and I am the president, so France is all about diplomacy. I said, no, France is also about revolution. So, and you have to recognize the revolution. And my
brother
was a hostage in the hand of regime. The Iranian regime put my innocent brother in prison. Why? Because this is their hostage-taking diplomacy. It's not you, President Macron. It's me as well. It's not just President Biden should actually talk to the family members of American citizens or Western citizens how to deal with hostage-taking diplomacy. We, the people of Iran, dealing with these hostage-takers, we never bow to these hostage-takers. For instance, they let my brother go. They let other political prisoners go. And they say that, go and ask Massey or go and ask your family members to do this, to do that. Then we're not going to let you to stay in prison. Definitely, I would say no. I'm going to be louder. Why? Because this is how hostage-taking diplomacy will fail. But if you give them money, like President Biden did, billions of dollars. So billion, I don't know, 6 billion, more than this. So of course that's gonna send a signal to dictators that okay, hostage taking diplomacy
works.
Unless you are standing up to dictators, they will continue pushing and pushing and pushing until they realize there is some kind of pushback that they find, whether it's in the, again, democratic world or among the domestic populace itself. I wanted to mention, you know, Alish, you talked a moment ago about how dictators, in cracking down on those that are protesting them, all too often end up creating what they want to avoid, whether it's revolution, regime change, upheaval, democracy, you name it. Masih, I wanted to bring it back to your story because you have been on the front end of these efforts time and again. And I mentioned in the introduction, your recent abduction and assassination attempts right here in the United States ago. Now, that was a few years ago, and we'll put some links in the show notes if folks want to read more about that. How has your life changed since then? And how has that, I imagine, only deepened your commitment to highlighting the crimes of this regime in Tehran?
To be honest, my life is totally, turned upside down. You know why? Because I remember the time when I was going to CNN, when the guy got arrested in front of my house with AK-47, I was absolutely broken. People might see me on CNN saying that I have no fear, which I had, you know, long conversation with Thor here at Human Rights Foundation. And he told me, Massey, no, you're braver than this. You can say that you can kill me, but not the ideals. And I said that I went there because I was surrounded by a lot of good friends and families from HRF. And, you know, but at the same time, I wanted to be honest with everyone who listening to me. So I thought that the time has come to tell everyone that I'm not that brave. I'm scared as well. I have to recognize my fear and frustration. I'm not that person that you see me on CNN. I have to watch over my shoulder. Every day when I go inside my home, I have to check everywhere to see everything is fine. I'm always worried about my son, my stepchildren. I always get really anxious when I get unknown call, maybe someone calling me, what happened to my husband? Maybe they killed my husband. Maybe they, you know, did something to my family. This is with me. And you know what? Maybe you've heard of the term dead man walking. So it's about those who are on the death row.
Right.
Those who are very close to be executed. So, but in pop culture, so evolved to those who live under massive death threats, no? So I think that I am the dead woman walking and talking. And I am being, I want to use this opportunity to say that I'm not even alone. I am being surrounded by a lot of dead men, dead women at HRF. When I see that, it's not, I'm not alone. So I feel empowered. And I feel like, I'm going to tell you, when I was talking to another dissident telling me that, yeah, I'm living under FBI protection, I was a survivor of assassination plot, immediately I said, oh, I'm so happy. And he was like, what? I said, no, I mean, I'm not happy, but I'm not alone. Not alone. So I want to tell you that this is not a path that people like me can fight alone. It's not. When Islamic Republic actually had a plot to kidnap me, when the FBI stopped the kidnapping plot, I thought this is over. But when they came back year after to hire killers in front of my house to kill me, I said to myself that, because I was alone, because the U.S. government didn't do anything. If they did, I mean, if there was a proper action, that wouldn't embolden the regime to get back with another plot, you know? So for that, I want to tell you that I don't know when they're going to be successful to kill me, because Islamic Republic doesn't like embarrassment.
Right, right.
Twice embarrassment is enough for them. They will come back to me. They will come back to Salman Rushdie. They will come back to many other dissidents with the help of Russia, China, you know, all dictators. They are really good at transnational repression.
Absolutely.
And people like me cannot fight on our own. We need the free world, the democratic countries, to criminalize transnational repression, but to protect dissidents.
And they're willing to play the long game too, you know?
Well, of course, the Salman Rushdie case, right here also in New York, you know, this was 30, 40 years after.
Oh, yeah, when I heard that, I was like, I want to go on the same stage and show the killers that we're not scared of you. But I don't think the organization willing to invite me. Why? I'm telling you, because sometimes, you know, assassination plot or kidnapping plot, maybe you think it's failed because the FBI has stopped that, but there are a lot of organizations, they're really scared of inviting people like me because of the safety of their attendees. Or, you know, even I was invited to a book lunch, to a wedding with friends. Then I was canceled with that absolutely beautiful email saying that we love you, we support you, but we're not as brave as you. And for the safety of our family members, we're going to, you know... They never use the word cancel, but...
It's isolated,
disinvite.
Yeah, and that means dictators can manage to scare people miles away from them.
Yeah.
I say that I'm not... I said that I'm not scared, but it is very, very scary to see that in 21st century, dictators from Iran, Russia, China, they can... challenge the U.S. government on U.S. soil. They can challenge the U.S. citizens on U.S. soil. Of course, I have a lot of friends now here. Even my neighbors in Brooklyn, they became my friends. And they're really supportive. But at the same time, I'm telling you, the fear is there. So maybe they can, they're not successful to physically get rid of me.
Yeah.
But in some way, they are successful to cancel people like me.
Well, Missy, managed to isolate.
We never had any second thoughts about having you on today.
Yay!
Organizing with you. Obviously, we're going to be joining you in Oslo. boy, next month, just a few weeks from now, the
we're
Oslo
always
Freedom
willing
Forum.
In your company.
Hopefully, plenty of folks will come out for that as well.
But you know, because I love you so much, then I even might be able to share my bullets with you.
Oh, how? Well, that's what friends are for. Right?
Sharing is caring.
But this gets back to what you were talking about earlier, about how the dictators are working together, instilling the fear in others. others that they are alone, that there is no one there to support them, but also that it is the democracies that need to have some kind of unified response, or at least more organized response, to show this kind of unified bloc that the dictators cannot win, will not win. We will protect those that are speaking out against them. And folks like you that have more bravery in their little fingers. And I know you said you're not brave, and that's fine, that you're only human, of course, but you are braver than 99% of the rest of humanity. You get up every day. You have not been silenced. You continue to speak out. And hopefully you see that reverberation. I mean, certainly, again, reading the news, talking about some of these cases, this bravery building upon itself until one day the regime finally, finally falls.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being very honest with you. The regime will fall by the hand of the people inside Iran. But at the same time, we have to be realistic. We cannot say that people themselves, unarmed women, unarmed teenagers, you know, armless people can overthrow this regime on their own. We need to see real actions from Western countries, from free world, to support and help people to have secular democracy. And that doesn't mean I'm asking the Western leaders to come and save us. Not at all. Right. I want them to stop saving our killers. Yeah. While we manage to shake the regime, I want them to stop shaking the hand of this regime.
Yeah.
That's all I want. And here we are.
Undoing the work that you guys are doing.
Exactly. Yeah. Look, I want the US government, the leaders of Western countries, free world, to understand that when they see Islamic Republic and terrorists, they should think, they should have bipartisan strategy. They should have common strategy against dictators. Why? To be honest, because if the Islamic Republic sent killers and want to target American citizens or Western citizens, they never ask you whether you're Republican or Democrat, you're left or right. Never. They don't care whether you support Trump or Biden. They hate you.
Yep.
They hate democracy. They hate America. So for that, America, the West, must see this as bipartisan act to end terrorism. So I want to actually give you an example, because everyone thinks, no, this is difficult. And that's actually sad. Because, look, I'm a village girl. So I haven't seen my family for 15 years. And it's not easy for me. So that's why I actually planted a tree in my garden in Brooklyn.
Cherry blossoms.
Cherry blossom. After my mom's name, I planted a tree in honor of my father, my brother. So I actually turned my beautiful garden like my village. So I grow vegetables, cucumbers, tomatoes, basil in my backyard garden. And I remember when I moved to America, I asked my husband, do you know any neighbors? My husband were like, why should I know the neighbors? I was like, whoa, this is my culture. So I started to knock the door.
I love
and
this.
Ask people whether you want to have some vegetables. And then I started to offer them pickles, because I make pickles out, you know, from that's the cucumbers of my garden. My husband were like, they are going to sue you. I was like, no, it's beautiful, because some of them having the sign of supporting Trump in their garden. Mm-hmm. Some of them having the sign of supporting Kamala and Biden in their garden. Some of them having, you know, support Obama. But these are my fellow citizens here in America. So I want to offer them, because this is my culture. None of them knew who I am. But when I was the target of assassination plot, that time, they were my neighbors, knocking the door, offering me red wine, offering me food. Some of them saying that if you want to hide anywhere, my house. This is the beauty of America.
Yeah.
When it comes to the national security or safety of their fellow citizens, they're all united. They don't care about the, you know, different political views. That is the America which became the beacon of hope for millions of people across the globe. But of course, my husband thinks that happened in my neighborhood because of my pickle diplomacy. But I think that
A new campaign.
A few pickles can go a long way, absolutely.
Maybe I can make pickles for Biden, Trump, Obama, Hillary Clinton, for everyone here.
You are welcome to bring pickles to the HRI office.
And we will endorse that. We will support that campaign,
happily
100%.
So you're supporting my pickle diplomacy campaign?
Yes, 100%.
America should come up with pickle diplomacy or bipartisan. That's it.
Yeah.
That's how you You are united against dictators. Otherwise, believe me, mm-hmm. dictators will get united and they will end democracy. Mm-hmm. I love my pickled
democracy. I love.
But again, it gets back to this theme that we've been talking about today. Within the dictatorships, you can feel alone. You can feel isolated, like you can't trust your neighbors, like you can't trust the community that's around you. One of the beauties of democracy. And again, I know we're preaching to the choir here, but because you have that sense of community, those people you can trust, you can turn to. Again, there's plenty of reasons to want to prefer democracy over a dictatorship, but that sense of belonging, that sense of community is absolutely one of them there.
This is what is missing now everywhere, that, you know, it's okay that you have different political views. You can challenge each other. Mm-hmm. You can mm-hmm. criticize each other. You take it for granted here, but people in my 100%. Country, they get killed for the crime of criticizing. For
a song lyric.
Exactly. And I have to say that my dream is to see that one day all the university campuses, mm-hmm. streets in New York, in D.C., everywhere in the West, is going to be full of people together marching for women of Iran and women of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Because this is another thing that is missing, that a lot of people do not want to talk about girls in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. girls in Iran being kicked out from schools for the crime of being girls, being women, mm-hmm. being kicked out from their job, being raped, facing rape in prison for showing their hair. Why? Because they think that, you know, that might empower Trump's mm-hmm. campaign. Mm-hmm. Or we should not touch this. It might cause Islamophobia. Mm. Believe me, supporting your sisters in Iran and Afghanistan are not going to make you Islamophobic. Here we are. Recently, we launched another campaign, Women of Iran and Afghanistan, and I really want to talk about my campaign because it's very important for me.
Yes, please.
The campaign called United Against Gender Apartheid. And I'm shocked in my meeting with the leaders of Free World, some of them still don't know that gender apartheid is still not a crime under international laws. Hmm. Apartheid is,
right,
but only racial apartheid. And I'm asking them, so is it okay if women get kicked out from everywhere mm-hmm. just because they are women for you? So if it's not, then this is something that everyone can be united. Mm-hmm. So we clearly asking the free world to join us to expand the definition of apartheid to include gender as well. Mm-hmm. And through that, I want to go to Harvard University. I want to go to Columbia University. I want to go everywhere alongside my sisters from Iran and Afghanistan who face rape, who lost their eyes, and educate the youth, the young generation here, to understand that when it comes to be an activist, dissidents, or, you know, a voice for freedom, you cannot be selective. You cannot just say that, I am fighting for this. No. Bury your political agenda. Mm-hmm. When mm-hmm. it comes to talk about women's rights, human rights, people should go first.
Agreed.
And that breaks my heart, that because I joined Women's March here mm-hmm. in America, I was very excited. I was shouting, my body, my choice. And then people were repeating, yes, her body, her choice. I was calling my friends in Iran and my family, telling them this is the first time I'm in the street protesting. No one arresting me. No one, you know. Mm-hmm. What happened? When I reached out to them to join me, help me to have Women's March for women of Iran and Afghanistan to fight back against compulsory hijab, they were like, shh. In Iran, I was told if I show my hair, I go to hell. In Iran, when I criticize Islamic ideology, I am called muharib and I get executed. My brother from Yemen, he understands me. So we cannot criticize Islamic laws, Sharia laws. We get hanged in my country, in the Middle East. But in the West, I am told that if you criticize Islamic ideology, then you cause Islamophobia. Mm-hmm. Hey, phobia is irrational. Mm-hmm. But my fear of Islamic ideology, my fear of Taliban, my fear of Islamic Republic, my fear of ISIS, mm-hmm. my fear of Hamas and Houthi is rational.
Yeah.
And if we want to have peace and security and equality, feminism, dignity across the globe, we must say, let's end Islamic dictatorship. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make you Islamophobic, believe
me. Right.
That only empower your sisters in Iran. Otherwise, you empower our killers to put more pressure on us.
Well, it makes you pro-democracy, and it makes you anti-dictatorship, which is what the Human Rights Foundation is all about. Masih, with maybe just a minute or two left, how can folks, how can listeners follow you more? How can they learn more about what you're doing? How can they support you in ways that perhaps other organizations in the past haven't?
First of all, I want all the organizations, all the media, leaders, policymakers, to hear my voice and do not cancel us. Do not call us women who experienced Sharia law, Islamic ideology. Do not call us radical.
Mm-hmm.
Radical? Radicals are those who kill us,
right,
who rape us, who target us beyond their own border, who are really good at, you know, using transnational repression as a tool to silence us on U.S. soil, on Western soil. So I want them to understand that we are here, women of Iran, Afghanistan, women and men from all the authoritarian regimes, to not only protect our own countries. No, we want to protect democracy. And that's not going to happen until the day that all the leaders of democratic mm-hmm. countries stop appeasing to authoritarian regimes. So they can support Human Rights Foundation, they can support World Liberty Congress, they can support my own organization, my Salty Freedom, or United Against Gender Apartheid campaign. That's how they can empower us, and they can send a signal to dictators that when it comes to support freedom fighters, we are here. We're going to cancel dictators, mm-hmm. not those who are fighting against dictatorship.
Let's cancel dictators. I'm all in.
Yeah, I remember when the killers got arrested in front of my house. That was the same day I went to, I don't want to name it, one of the big organization here mm-hmm. in New York. When they saw my face, they said, oh, you're the one being, oh, wait a minute, I have to make a phone call. And then he came back to me and he said, sorry, we cannot have you here because of the safety of our employees. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow. Right now I'm here. Ibrahim Raisi is being the president of Islamic mm-hmm. Republic, being invited by a lot of media. So you don't cancel him, but you cancel me?
Unbelievable.
That's beyond sad. Let's end this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's end that and let's expand perhaps even pickle diplomacy.
Pickle diplomacy.
Next time I will bring my pickles.
Yes, please. Masih, it's been an honor again to have you on today. Alicia, anything else from you?
Thank you so much for coming in. The Human Rights Foundation is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that promotes and protects human rights globally with a focus on closed societies. We promote freedom where it's most at risk, in countries ruled by authoritarian regimes.